you can eat around the world in Seattle. We have many, many kinds of food. But when you go to some of these restaurants, be aware you might be stepping into food politics. White chefs building a reputation and making money off the food of people of color. They talked about this in a food podcast called The Sporkful, hosted by Dan Pashman. Here's part of their series called Cooking Other People's Food.
You can be white and an acclaimed chef, and you can play with other people's food. But if you are not white, if you're not an acclaimed chef, you do not, in fact, have that freedom.
This is Professor Krishnendu Rey, chair of the Food Studies Department at NYU and author of the new book, The Ethnic Restaurateur. For his book, he talked to the noted Indian chef Floyd Cardoz.
Nobody would take it seriously that he could make good new American cuisine for the longest time. They would always confine him to Indian food. You are Indian, so obviously you can do Indian food. But nobody says that in that sense to Thomas Keller. He can do almost anything he wants.
I think that it's great that someone is so interested in a culture that they really want to get to know it and to study it deeply.
This is Chitra Agrawal. She writes a food blog called ABCDs of Cooking. ABCD stands for American Born Confused Desi. Desi is a slang term for a South Asian. So Chitra likes the idea of people wanting to immerse themselves in other cultures, but she also has reservations about it that come from writing her own cookbook.
A lot of the recipes that I was writing about had a lot to do with food memory and growing up around that food. That is an element that I don't know if someone coming from another perspective can capture.
So those are some of the issues that can come up when we cook other people's food. Then there's this.
A lot of people are bothered, and I'm sometimes bothered, when you see a lot of white Southern chefs that are kind of the face of Southern food.
This is Nicole Taylor. She's the author of the Up South Cookbook. She grew up in Athens, Georgia, lives in New York now.
Who brought, quote unquote, Southern food to the Americas? I mean, Southern food is black food, and there are a ton of black chefs that have the same pedigree, and they don't get any media attention.
Nicole, Chitra, and Professor Ray all agree that chefs can specialize in a cuisine they didn't grow up with and do it in a way that's really positive and respectful. Professor Ray says learning the language is a big step in the right direction. Nicole puts it this way.
I think that there are some chefs that they're not only cooking the food of other cultures, they are immersed in the culture and they're students of the culture.
When done right, Professor Ray says cooking other people's food is actually really important.
The consequences of not doing it is, in some ways, we'll be kind of ghettoized in our own culture, and I don't think that makes it a more interesting world at all. And I don't think that makes it a more equal world either.
That was Professor Krishnendu Rey, chair of NYU's Food Studies Department. One of those famous white chefs is Rick Bayless. He's built a 30-year career cooking Mexican food. He owns two successful Mexican restaurants in Chicago. You can buy his salsas at the grocery store. But he's a white guy from Oklahoma. Rick Bayless told the Sporkful podcast how he fell in love with Mexican food.
When I was 14, I convinced my folks to take a trip to Mexico City. I had taken eighth grade Spanish, so I was sure that I could be the interpreter for our group. And I made all the airline reservations, the hotel reservations. Now, why any parent would allow their 14-year-old to do this? And I did the whole itinerary for the trip. And I got to Mexico City, and I think it was about 30 minutes into it that I felt more comfortable there than I had ever felt anywhere in my life. It just seemed like I had come home.
In 1987, Bayless opened his first restaurant, Frontera Grill, in downtown Chicago. He was determined to show Americans that Mexican food is way more than tacos. Bayless says he was translating classic Mexican food for an American audience, tweaking it to make it more accessible and familiar while still preserving the soul of it. And his translations were a big hit. 2 years after opening Frontera, he opened another restaurant, and his empire has just grown from there. He's become the face of high-end Mexican food in America, but he's also faced criticism. Here's Professor Krishnendu Rey again, explaining where that criticism comes from.
I see it as a way of raging against inequality in the field.
He has mixed feelings about these kinds of translations.
what is gained in some ways is maybe subtlety, sophistication, because these are often skilled translators. You also lose some of the vernacular things that cannot be translated. I'm saying this with some amount of hesitation, because I think translation is a good and an interesting thing. I'm not opposed to it. And not all translations is a colonizing act. But on the other side, all translations are also some kind of a loss.
For Bayliss's part, he sees his work as just the way foods move around the world.
You ask most Mexicans about mole, which is the most revered dish in the Mexican repertoire. And they'll say, oh, it dates back millennia. It came from the pre-Columbian cultures. And then I always want to ask next, then why are 50% of the ingredients in a mole from elsewhere in the world? It just doesn't make sense. You talk about a red chili sauce, yeah, you could say that goes back for millennia. But mole is actually a fusion dish that has elements from Southeast Asia and elements from Europe blended together seamlessly with ingredients from the New World.
And so when you look at things that way, I can see how you taking Mexican food and bringing it to the U.S. and in some ways adapting it to help translate it, to use your word, to a white American audience is in keeping with the same traditions that created Mexican food in the first place. It doesn't seem like such a crazy departure. But as much as I know that there are many grandmothers who love you like their own grandsons because of your work and your cookbooks, there are also other Mexicans and Mexican Americans who are like, screw this guy Rick Bayliss. And so how do you feel when you get that kind of reaction to your work?
Well, usually people that have that opinion of me don't want to have a conversation. Those people that say it are usually very political, and they have a mouthpiece, and they just go around saying it, and everybody thinks, oh, lots of people must believe that. And honestly, I don't think they do. I know that there have been a number of people out there that have criticized me only because of my race. Because I'm white, I can't do anything with Mexican food. Okay, so you have to stop and say, wait, is that just plain racism then?
So what is it that you think people, what is it that you think that they don't understand? Like, what's the conversation you want to have with them? What would you like to say to them?
I would just like to talk to them about Mexican food. And I would talk, and I think that within 10 minutes into a conversation, I could share my passion for promoting what I think is the greatest cuisine on the planet. And that it doesn't come from a shallow understanding of it. It comes from a very deep understanding of it. I've done everything that I could to make it my own. And I just don't even understand where they're coming from. It just sounds like sort of weird racism.
Do you think that at times in your career it has been to your advantage to be white?
I don't know the answer to that. I certainly have never thought about that. I mean... The fact that I could talk to people in a certain way, maybe that has been an advantage of mine. But still, I had to craft the words. It wasn't just because I was white that they would come to my restaurant, because restaurants fail at alarming rates. And I think probably all of our listeners know that. And to be a growing restaurant for 30 years says something that has to do a lot, I think, with the flavor of the food on the plate.
Chef Rick Bayliss there, owner of two Mexican restaurants in Chicago. He was talking with Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful podcast from WNYC Studios. The Sporkful's available wherever you get your podcasts. Angela Garbez is a food writer for The Stranger here in Seattle. She thinks Rick Bayliss is wrong.
So white privilege is directly tied to food.
Now, Garbez does not have a problem with white chefs who cook from a culture that's not their own. She does have a problem when they don't see the role privilege plays in their success.
Think of all the other talented Mexican chefs that are out there who came to the United States maybe as immigrants. Cooking was the one way that they could make an entrance into the American economy. But they don't have the same access to resources, say, to loans, to marketing, to audiences, to the real estate that's going to draw people in a great neighborhood that's going to draw diners in. So white chefs are at an advantage in that sense. And so you'll see it here. It plays out in Seattle. You know, we go to the International District for Chinese food or Japanese food. And we use a term that I tried to avoid using, but it's common, which is that we say that we're going to a hole in the wall, right? Which implies a certain sort of judgment, right? That it's you're going to have to prepare yourself for something or look past something to enjoy this food. So we tend to value certain dining experiences and certain cuisines more than we value others. And those directly often correspond with race.
So what would you want a white chef who wants to cook, well, what isn't ethnic food, you know, who wants to cook a food identified with far shores, or south of the border, what do you want one of those white chefs to do with the fact that they have white privilege?
I mean, at this point, I think acknowledging it is really the most important thing. Because what else, maybe from there we can have a conversation that leads to how can we make it so that we can direct more resources to minority-owned businesses? How can we raise the profile of other chefs? So I just interviewed Jerry Tronfeld, who is one of Seattle's and one of the Pacific Northwest's most revered chefs. He cooked at the Herb Farm, which really defined fine dining in this region for decades. And he has two restaurants here in Seattle. One is called Poppy, and he makes very much his food there. It's seasonal Northwest ingredients with herbs, but a lot of the inspiration comes from India. He just opened a restaurant last summer called Lionhead, in which he's cooking fairly traditional Sichuanese cuisine. He spent time traveling in China, and he did research there. Acknowledging white privilege doesn't necessarily mean, hey, look at me, like I totally had a super big advantage over all of you, you know. And it's also, we shouldn't think that acknowledging privilege takes away from the hard work and the careful study that you've done. I think that many chefs, any chef who's worth his or her salt is doing that research and wants to understand where the food is coming from. But I think what you can do there, when I talk to Jerry, what he was very quick to say was, you know, I'm not an expert. I like cooking this food and I'm learning all the time. And he was very quick to praise and give credit to his sous chef and his chef de cuisine. Their names are Kenny Lee and Sean Lin. And he said, they have taught me things about Chinese technique that I would never have learned in a book that is really valuable. And he learns from them every day. So
I ask you because I feel like part of this conversation has gotten reduced to, oh, it's not okay for a white guy to cook Mexican food, to cook?
That's the question that I often get, or that's the reaction that I get to some of the thoughts that I put forward and to what I'm writing, and I'll just say it here really clearly. It's fine. I don't care what you cook. Chefs are creative, curious people. For many diners, they're, you know, I'm sure Jerry Tronfeld is introducing people in Seattle to Sichuan food, possibly for the first time. Right. That's very important. It's great. You know, so they're in some ways cultural ambassadors. Right. But so there's responsibility that goes along with that. As we become a more diverse culture, we've always been diverse, but as we get more diverse and as people are more aware and as people want to talk about these issues more, it behooves you to be able to speak about that, to be able to acknowledge it. I mean, if we're working towards a more equitable society, which I would like to think that all of our listeners out there want that, you can't move towards that unless you can talk about it. And that's really where I think Rick Bayless failed, to not even be able to acknowledge it. Then there's no conversation that can be had.
Angela Garbez, a food writer for The Stranger.